Hey, this is Russell, and I work at the video store, the place that we can all go to every week when it's movie night. On days like today, when the store is quiet, I get to watch movies and series and talk about them with my friends that work here. All right, let's do it. Let's open up the shop. Did you see that thing yesterday on the TV? Good morning, Perrin.
How's it, Russell?
How are you, my friend?
I'm good. How are you today?
I'm fantastic.
Good, man.
I'm fantastic. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the video store. Thank you for wandering into our video store. We love our video store. Hey, Perrin.
We adore our video store. It's a staple of the community, you know?
It is, right?
Yeah.
We've got ourselves just a chat between myself and Perrin today, which I think is lovely.
Mm.
And you and I, we went to the movies last week.
Yes. Twice. I'm actually sick of the sight of you. So.
We had a double mandate. Yeah. and we're going to talk about it. It was Furiosa. And we also got to see Hitman, which we want to talk about. So we're going to get into that. This is the Clerks episode where it's just us behind the counter having a fat chat. Later this week, though, on Thursday, is going to be our guest chat. And this week we're going to have Richard Gao, who is an actor, but he's more than just an actor. He's a theater actor, which takes on a whole new level of acting.
Yeah, he's a thespian. He's an actor.
He's a thespian, but he's also a musical theater actor. So
oh, wow.
There's a lot to unpack and chat. So that's going to be later this week on Thursday. Before we get underway, I just want to make a little announcement for all those browsing the store.
Attention all customers, this is to let you know that our friends over at Duos Wine are running a special little promotion with us. If you head on over to duos.wine and use the promo code VideoStoreDuos, you can get 15% off your order on all Duos Wine, but you have to choose the pickup at the Bioscope. So you can save on shipping if you live in Joburg by choosing the pickup at the Bioscope. But there, in the checkout, if you use Video Store Duos, you can get 15% off your wine. It's good wine in a box. That's duos.wine.
All right, before we get too much into it, old Perrin, let's deal with a customer who's got a return.
Okay.
So this is folks who are returning stuff that they are watching. And the instruction on how you can do this is in the description of this episode. So look down below wherever you are listening to this, and we can explain to you how you can send a return. I see someone coming now.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Daniel from Joburg, returning X-Men 97 season 1 to the video store. Thanks, guys. Good recommendation. What worked well for me was the updated animation, seeing characters from my childhood in new and exciting stories and having them told well. What didn't work so well was the over-reliance on nostalgia, trying to cram a bit too much maybe into this first season, and characters never really dying and just keeping on coming back. But great watch. Thanks, guys. All the best.
All right. Thank you, Daniel. We appreciate that. I still haven't watched X-Men 97.
Yeah, I started rewatching the original X-Men animated series because it's like set.
It's the
follow-on.
It's
complete,
and
perfect follow-on. I'm excited to get to 97. I'm really pumped.
Oh, so you're prepping yourself.
Yeah, everyone's like freaking out about it, and apparently it like kicks ass. So like I'm glad people are enjoying it.
Okay.
Yeah.
You saying I don't want to see your face reminds me of after one of many years doing the Bioscope with the guy I started it with, which was a guy called Daryl.
Yeah.
Daryl Else. And it's so funny because we were good friends before we started. We were buddies at varsity. Mm. And I'll never forget one Christmas holiday. Daryl going, I don't want to see your face for another like month.
Yeah,
he's
no,
like,
for
have
sure.
Have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year, but I don't want to see your face. Because you can sometimes get a bit tired of each other. But I don't think I'll ever get tired of you, Perrin.
Oh, thanks, Russell. Actually, I take back what I said.
That's okay.
I think I'll get sick of Cole's face because we, like you said on Furious, we just indulged him the whole night.
Yes. So we went out. Let's get into it. We went to watch Furiosa, a Mad Max saga, last Wednesday. It is now in cinemas. It's had its opening weekend. So if you have gone to go watch it, I'd love to hear your thoughts. But there's a little bit of pageantry around these premiere nights, one of which is taking part in like a photo booth that they set up.
Yes, yeah.
And Cole insisted that we all take a photo. And I must say, I was against it because you have to line up.
Yeah.
It wastes a lot of time.
Yeah.
But I must say, I'm very glad.
The photo was worth it, eh?
We did it. Gad always takes the best photos.
Yeah.
Unquestionably takes the best photos. There's actually a whole section, speaking of photos, of Gad.
Oh, really?
If anyone knows Gad or is very interested in this, if you type in hashtag Gadspills, so GADSPILLS, there is a whole wing of Instagram dedicated to the times Gad has spilt something on himself, and we have documented it.
Amazing.
Because we travel together as a band. Gad is a member of Short Straw, which I'm a part of, and so there's a whole bunch of that. What did you think of Furiosa?
I loved Furiosa, so much so that straight after the movie, when I got home, it was a terrible idea. I got home at like 11-ish, somewhere around
there. It was a long movie.
It's
2.5 hours.
Yeah,
but it shoots by.
Yeah, it shoots by. I got home and I watched Fury Road.
You did. Okay.
And it was a terrible idea because I was absolutely knackered by the end of it. And the next day was kind of a long work day as well. And I was just like, oh, this is a bad idea.
But this is why we want you as a coworker at the video store, because you would do something fucking stupid like that.
100%.
So for those who don't know, but perhaps have an idea, Furiosa is a part of the Mad Max world.
Yes.
And and let's just, for those who don't know, let's just get into what exactly that Mad Max world is.
Yeah.
A very long time ago, Australian filmmaker
George Miller
made this sort of very indie, to be honest, it's quite a cack movie.
Yeah, it feels very like almost like an exploitation picture. I mean, it's about a guy fighting a biker gang, who kills his wife and child, you know?
And we're talking about the original and the very first Mad Max, which starred fellow Australian actor Mel Gibson, who I think at the time was not that famous.
No, he wasn't, yeah.
And it's a pretty, like, indie cuck movie. No one's really sort of...
it was done on a shoestring budget, yeah.
It's a bunch of bogans.
It's a bunch of bogans.
The roads are all tarmac roads, you know. Yeah. Like, but it is set in the future where civilization is starting to kind of crumble.
Yeah.
And it was met with perhaps some indie mediocre success. But as George Miller then got more money over the course of the 80s then.
Late 70s was...
when was the first one?
The first one was late 70s, and then the next two were 80s.
In the 80s.
Yeah.
So in all the 80s glory, he made these sequels, built the world a bit bigger. There was Road Warriors now, and Tina Turner was a part of it, and he started seeing his vision, right?
Yeah.
But then that was it.
Yeah, it just got crazier.
But how many did he make?
He made 3 at the time. So he made...
the first one and then another 2.
Yeah, Road Warrior was the second one, then Thunderdome was the third. Well, that's with Tina Turner.
Tina Turner was in the third.
Yeah. And then he was quiet for like 30 years.
Exactly. And that's what's interesting. Yeah.
Well, not quiet. I mean, he did Babe and Happy Feet.
That's what's so funny. I want to get into it. So you know, here's this guy who makes this crazy apocalyptic world.
Yeah.
And of course, if you know Fury Road, which we'll get to, you know where his brain was.
Yeah.
But in this interim, he made these other movies, which I want to get into. Mm. And then out of kind of seemingly out of nowhere came Fury Road.
Yeah.
Which was what time? What date? Do we know?
2015.
2015.
Yeah.
And it took the whole world by surprise because it was visually completely different to what we'd ever seen. It was his, you know, his vision completely manifested. in a way that can now be done. A lot of practical effects. Yeah. I remember hearing about it because a lot of it was shot in Namibia.
Yeah.
And just visually stunning.
Yeah.
But then when people watched it, they were like, oh my God, I fucking love this. I'm not entirely sure even why I love this, but I do. And it won Oscars.
Yeah.
And I think
resonated with people.
And I think that's what's interesting is because when you make something like that, you realize that you've got this, I'm thinking of it more and more, and I'm using it a little bit more and more on the show. You've got this secret sauce.
Yeah, for sure.
And I use that word quite carefully because you're not quite sure what that is.
Yeah.
It's there's a magic in it that you can't quite figure out. And I think what it is, I'm going to take a stab, is that it's art.
It is, 100%.
It's like visual art where this frame just looks so different, so colorful, so crazy that it takes you by a complete surprise.
You know what, like the crazy thing about like Fury Road is that like what makes Fury Road so good. So Fury Road is essentially it's a 2-hour chase movie, right?
Yeah.
And what I love about Fury Road is, and I watched a recent interview with George Miller and stuff, and he made such a good point about how action cinema and silent cinema are, action cinema is amongst the purest forms of cinema, right? You look at the early days of blockbuster filmmaking, the Buster Keatons, the Harold Lloyds.
Studio films. Yeah,
the especially Buster Keaton and Harold Lloyd, where they made action films, right? They made
big the Charlie stunt, Chaplins as well. Yeah,
big stunt-driven action films. I mean,
think of that. They're one of him on the train.
Yeah, the general. That's Buster Keaton. Yeah. And then Harold Lloyd is that famous one where the image of a man hanging from the clock.
Yes.
Yeah, that's Safety Last. And like with those movies, they are pure action films. You're seeing, they're not telling you what's happening, they're showing you what's happening.
Yeah.
And Fury Road does it so well with showing you what's happening with these crazy stunts, you know, these explosions and like practical effects. But they're also telling you, they're building this world of story that is so interesting. Like that's one thing that made Fury Road so resonate so well with people is that it was smartly written. It was a film that was topical. It was it's one of the best examples of the Bechdel test being passed.
You're going to have to unpack that, sorry.
So the Bechdel test is, shout out in the comments if I'm...
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, but the whole idea of the Bechdel test is there has to be a certain amount of women in the film, all have names, the characters have names, so it's not woman one, woman two, they all have individual names, and they have conversations with each other that don't involve men. You get what I'm saying?
Okay, wait, hold on. So this is a test of how
there was a woman
sort of
who,
feminist or how
it's basically
how balanced your film is.
Yeah, it's basically the whole idea is it's try to balance out your films where the women don't just talk about men. You know what I mean? Or they don't just talk about relationships or sex or whatever. It's all about creating female characters that actually have life and substance to them.
So this is a test.
I mean?
This is a test to check whether your film qualifies for this.
Yeah,
it just passes.
I don't think it's an official test. It was a woman by the name. I mean,
Bechdel has to be involved.
Yeah, Bechdel was a surname.
But check it out quick because what I want to do, sorry, before we get too far down the road, is to just put some context behind this. So we're talking about Fury Road, which came out 2016, you said? 2015.
Yeah.
The main character of Fury Road was Charlize Theron's character, Furiosa.
Yes.
Who. What was great about this is that we were going into a Mad Max movie and we did have Mad Max as the character, you know, in this film.
Yeah.
But who really stole the show was a female character.
Yeah, 100%.
Which was Charlize Theron's...
Great character as well.
Furiosa.
Yeah.
This is now, what we're talking about, Furiosa, and what we're going to get into, is George Miller now doing a prequel to Furiosa and showing us the origin story of Furiosa. Okay,
yeah.
So that's how it all fits in. Okay, but let's get back to the Bechdel test. What is it?
Okay, so yeah, so it's this is just off of Wikipedia, but this basically sums it up really well. The Bechdel test, also known as the Bechdel-Wallace test, is a test to measure the representation of women in film and other fiction. The test asks whether a work features at least two female characters who have a conversation about something other than a man. In some iterations, the requirement that the two female characters have names is added.
Okay.
So,
So yeah. This immediately makes me think of the joke that went around the internet. It was all over Instagram, or at least my Instagram at one point last year, which was, we are now going to show you all the moments that one female talks to another female in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. And it's literally this 1 second moment where a little kid like turns to its mom.
Yeah.
And just goes like, mommy, yeah. And that's it.
And then like,
and then it cuts to credits.
Yeah, and the credits is for like girl child one.
Yeah.
Like woman with child.
Yeah.
Yeah, but okay. So that's what like Fury Road did so well, is that it didn't feel like a checkbox movie. It felt very organically done, you know what I mean? Like it felt like that was the natural order for this world to go.
Yeah.
And I'm actually I know a lot of people who weren't a big fan of Fury Road because they're like, oh, but Mad Max just grunts throughout the movie.
He's not that much of a feature.
Yeah, I mean,
Tom Hardy.
Yeah, he does, you know, he helps them out and stuff, and he's an integral part of them getting from point A to point B. But that movie is Charlize Theron's movie. It's Furiosa's movie. And when we went to go watch Furiosa, after Furiosa, I was like, honestly, I'm okay with the Mad Max universe going in this direction now.
And not actually having Max.
Yeah. I mean, there is a little cool callback to him at some
point. There's a little nod, yeah.
Yeah, but it's nothing like only the nerds like us who like push our glasses to our brim. Like, there he is. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I turn to Cole. I'm like, cool, these Max.
Yeah. No, but it's great because it becomes something bigger. And I think that's what's exciting. And let's get into it. The world that George Miller's now brought back to life 30 years later after doing Babe, Pig in the City 2. You know, like he made some weird little movies.
Pig in the City is weird. The second one is like really bizarre. It's like so
What
surreal.
Else did he do? Happy Feet? That's
Happy
also
Feet,
odd.
Yeah.
It's an odd movie.
It is an odd movie.
So here's this filmmaker who we know is going to bring us the most insane, violent, apocalyptic world.
Yeah.
But he's waiting for some reason, or he's busy working on it, or he's putting it in development, waiting for it to be perfect. And in the meantime, he's making a sequel to Babe.
Happy Feet.
And Happy Feet.
Yeah.
But then he gets it. He blows us away with Fury Road, and then here comes Furiosa. It's this far future where we're in this kind of desert world.
Yeah.
I don't know whether Fury Road ever located it on a map, but Furiosa does, which is great. It goes, this is Australia. You see a map of the world, it zooms in on Australia, and you are in the middle of the Australian desert, which I think is cool because it just gives it more flavor.
Oh, yeah.
And here we have the origin story of Charlize Theron's character, Furiosa, and her life as she gets... I don't want to give too much away, but she sort of gets kidnapped. She gets taken. She's held hostage. She then escapes. She goes on this crazy journey.
Yeah.
And we are introduced to a great villain played by Chris Hemsworth called Dementus. Who is unbridled Australian, which is great. And I think...
It's a proper Bruce, eh?
It's so cool to hear him be Australian.
Yeah, we've never like experienced that from Chris Hemsworth like before.
To be unmistakably Australian.
But like even like more so. So he's like, good day, hello, you know?
Yeah, my favorite is the scene where there's this incredible car accident, this huge wreckage, and our heroes are in the car. He comes up to the car now, and you think it could be this, you know, intense line.
Yeah.
Or crazy action, or him reaching in, or being violent. Instead, it's just him. He goes up to the car and he's like, "Hello." It's very funny.
Yeah,
and he's really great in it. He just could really like be a good villain.
Yeah, that's what I loved about it. Is like there's two opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of performance. So like with Anya Taylor-Joy as Furiosa, who. I'm sorry, like, I don't understand people who are like, oh, the casting's wrong there. The casting was pretty damn great, actually, for a young Charlize Theron, right? She was great. Great performance. I mean, she's only got, like, 30 lines, but she does a lot by, like...
looking.
Yeah, looking and like showing us how she's feeling instead of telling us.
Did I lean to you about the eyes? Was that, I think I said that to you. At one point, you know, so they've got this look in this post-apocalyptic world. They do things. They cover their bodies in certain colors and textures and things. And what we know Charlize Theron did from an art direction point of view was have her forehead darkened.
Yeah. Black paint almost.
Like a war look. And of course now Anya Taylor-Joy is starting to, her, you know, young Furiosa is doing that. And I turned to you and I'm like, it really makes their eyes pop.
You do that. Yeah. But and then there was, so her performance is this, you know, very physical, like very like hard like performance. And then you've got Chris Hemsworth, who's been given complete freedom to be this batshit insane, unpredictable, like
unkillable cartoon, in a way. Like
he's almost like a cartoonish villain, you know? Yeah. But it works because it's the Mad Max world. The Mad Max world has always been batshit insane. Fury Road was like insanity on screen.
And everything's dialed to 11.
This one I feel was a lot straighter than Fury Road in terms of like insanity. It's not as crazy. It's still super weird, which is great because that's part of the secret sauce, so to speak, right? Mm. But at the end of the day, I mean, one thing that people should not go into Furiosa expecting is Fury Road Part 2. The action sequences are phenomenal, obviously.
And there is a little bit of that magic.
Yeah.
But there's more story in this one.
There's more
great
world building. Like, Fury Road was very restricted to an event.
It was
right?
this one car chase.
Yeah, this one car chase. There's lots world building. Like they mentioned Gas Town and Bullet Farm and stuff like that. This one
actually goes into those
they
places.
They build the lore, which is really cool. And also one thing we mentioned, I remember on the night, is that we were like, yeah, you know, this is the fifth movie. And then we actually realized that it's more of a, Fury Road feels more of a hard reset on like a total reboot, because none of the first three films are really exist in this world, because the first three films are, I mean, you watch the first one, like you said, the world is in the process of falling apart. There's still like cities and it looks pretty normal, but I think that's also because of the budget.
Exactly. No, yeah, they could go wild. No, lovely, man. And just to take this to something a bit more personal.
Yeah.
There was a point where we were watching it in IMAX, so it was just sounding and looking amazing.
Yeah.
And I want to get into the rest of the week, because I want to start talking about this. Yeah. And I was like, here I am watching this movie with my chummies, because all the guys came out, right?
Yeah.
All the other clerks were with us. And you and I were then also going to watch Hitman the next day. And I was like, this is a good life.
Aww.
You know what I mean? I was
so
like, this
cute.
Is cool. I was like, this is awesome.
Yeah.
I'm having a good time. I'm watching a great movie.
Yeah.
I get to watch these movies before everyone else.
Yeah.
Like the little 16-year-old Russell would look to this moment and go like, this is pretty fucking
cool. Yeah, this is pretty sick. Yeah.
Like, this is cool. Like, it's film nerdy in some degree, but it's also just like, this is cool, man. These are great movies. You're with your friends. You're having a good time.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you get to talk about them.
Exactly, man.
But, no, so it was a nice moment. And I must say, I had a great week last week.
Yeah, it was a good week.
It was just lovely for the Bioscope. We had great events and, you know, things were doing well and we were watching good movies.
Yeah.
So no, it was a nice week. And I think this week will be a good week too.
Yeah, exactly.
We all got to vote.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hopefully.
Tomorrow, yeah.
Hopefully a little course of South Africa is put in on a decent enough course.
Yeah.
Let's hope. But then the next movie we watched was Hitman, which is an interesting one because it's the kind of movie that I don't think a lot of people have heard about.
Which is a shame.
It's fallen a little under the radar, and I think that's because this movie is destined to be on Netflix.
Yeah.
So it's coming to Netflix in about 2 weeks' time. I think Friday the 7th, they said. So that's its big showing.
Mm.
So it's got this small little cinema window now. But it hasn't been given too big a press because I think its destiny is to kind of come to Netflix. And I saw it coming because someone told me, this is Linklater.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? So Richard Linklater is a very famous filmmaker who's made some of the greatest films ever made.
Yeah, he's a
you
great.
You could argue.
I would say he's probably my top three favorite dialogue writers. He's a phenomenal writer, dialogue-wise, as well. Jeez.
Here's this new film made by him that looks like a sort of silly action movie. Mm. It's called Hitman. It's got Glenn Powell, who's this, you know, the new Hollywood leading man, heartthrob. Yeah. You know him from Maverick. You know him from, a few other things.
Sydney Sweeney movie.
Yeah,
Anyone But You.
Yeah. So he's sort of in these kind of rom-coms, but he's very much a handsome man.
He's a nice handsome man.
And you know that this movie's got something to do with assassins or being a hitman. And so you think, fuck, eye roll.
Yeah, Night and Day, Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Exactly.
Kind of movie,
I'm secretly an assassin.
Yeah,
ha ha ha.
Yeah.
And those are dumb. They're dumb movies. And so I think if you are lucky enough to see some marketing for this movie, you're going to think it's one of those movies.
Yeah.
And so you're probably going to go like, oh,
yeah,
no. Or watch it and perhaps be a bit confused.
Yeah.
Richard Linklater made School of Rock.
Yeah, that's his most mainstream.
That's his most mainstream movie. And that is the reason why School of Rock is as good as it is.
Yeah, exactly.
It's why it stood the test of time.
Yeah.
Why it doesn't just go into every other comedy movie Jack Black might have been in. What made that special?
Yeah.
It's because it was made by the same dude who made Before Sunrise.
Yeah, and Dazed and Confused.
Dazed and Confused.
Slacker.
Scanner
Darkly. He's made so many bangers.
He's made Waking Life.
I know. Which, his philosophical
which
walking
is the
and talking
most,
movie.
It's the most concentrated.
Yeah.
It's basically philosophy at a varsity level. It's literally a lecture of philosophy.
Yeah.
Done in this beautiful artistic way called rotoscoping.
Yeah.
So this is what happens when you give a guy like this movie. So Hitman is making fun of the very movie you think it's going to be.
Exactly.
So it's poking fun at the idea that we all think there are just these assassins that are amongst us and that's a real job.
Yeah, it's not like John Wick where every fucking human being on planet Earth is apparently an assassin.
Yeah.
You know?
It's so stupid.
It's so stupid.
And so it is based on or inspired by
very loosely based on
a real life story of a guy who pretends to be an undercover hitman.
Yeah, he's an undercover hitman, yeah.
And so what that means is that, and this really happened, if the police ever get a tip of someone wanting to hire a hitman, so they could put in a fake ad in the newspaper, or if word gets around that this person is wanting to hire someone, they send in their undercover cop, pretending to be a hitman. If on tape it's recorded that you say, I want this person killed, and you hand this undercover cop money, you have immediately committed a crime.
Yeah.
Soliciting a murder or whatever the proper term is. And so Glenn Powell's character is this kind of nerdy guy who helps the police. He's a varsity lecturer. He's a little bit of a loser.
Yeah,
they try their best to make him look
like he's
uncool,
this really ugly, like nerdy guy.
It's a little kind of Princess Diaries sort of trying to make some of the most beautiful people in the world look.
Even though he's already insanely hot in the movie. Yeah. Like the whole time I'm sitting there, I'm like, Jesus, like I finally see it now. Because I always liked Glenn Powell, but I rewatched, we'll get a bit into that later, but carry on.
Yes. Okay. Well, anyways, so he then has to step in and be this undercover cop, pretending to be a hitman, and he fucking nails it. He's good at doing it.
Yeah.
He takes on this character. He's a natural at doing it. And so he then becomes this person in the police force, and he takes it a step and beyond by coming up with different characters to make sure he gets the the result, which is to have someone hire him. And in amongst all of that, he meets lovely woman. They hit it off immediately.
Their
chemistry is incredible.
Outrageous.
And he realizes she's a little different. She's not a person who wants necessarily to kill someone.
Yeah.
There's more vulnerability. He falls for her and then chaos. Not
ensues,
chaos, but sort of complications ensue.
Yeah.
And it becomes such a great movie. It's so smart. There's certain scenes which I don't want to give away, but there's certain scenes where in a normal, typical movie, it would be this over-the-top...
Yeah, I know which scene you're talking about.
And these over-the-top moments where he knows, but she knows, but she's upset, and it would be this big, whole, messy sort of scene, but they present it to you in this film in a far smarter, far nuanced way.
Yeah, the scene that you're talking about, I mean, I'm not going to give anything away as well, but like, it's such a great scene because it's a great example of subtext as well in a scene. And there's so many layers happening in that scene. There's like almost three layers of subtext happening in that scene. And I remember the scene was going on, the crowd was loving it. They were like laughing along with it. And he was like, the performances were amazing. Dialogue was amazing. But then once that scene ended, you and me turned to each other. We're like, fuck, that was good, eh? We're like, that was amazing.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, there were also points in the film. I remember there was the one point where the film started to shift, not tonally, but like, just like structurally and like how Linklater was going to do with his usual, with his trademark brand of like very talky movies. You know what I mean? Where lots of great dialogue and lots of dialogue where it's, there's lots of layers to it. You know what I mean? So there's that scene where he's talking to, I can't remember if it's a coworker or his sister.
It's like it's his ex.
Yeah, it's his ex, yes. And they're talking about where she's like, you know, you should meet someone or, you know, you should date. And he's
relationships
like,
and getting back on it. Yeah.
But this scene, normally in a movie, that scene would be like a minute and a half. Like, oh, you got to go do this. And this scene goes on for like 6-7 minutes of them just talking.
Yeah.
And I remember you turned to me and they're like, the pacing is so weird in this movie. Cause
it's different.
Before that, we just saw a montage of like some of his kooky disguises and characters. And that's one point in the film where I felt that like it didn't quite need it to be there, is that they overdid the characters at certain point where they're like, this is how good he is, but they did it like 6 times. You're like, I get it. He's good.
He's good. He can catch these people.
I'm more interested in this now. You know what I mean?
Well, so I think this is interesting, is that when you, if you do ever study film, when you do screenwriting, they give you certain guidelines, which has almost been worked out to be a psychology, science tested way of doing a scene. And of course, this is what's so lovely about art, is that you can always break these rules.
100%.
But it's very important to actually know what some of these rules are. And one of the rules is that you perhaps don't want to be in one location for longer than 3 minutes or something like that, which is roughly 3 pages of scene when you're writing a script. So these things help you, because if you stay somewhere for too long, the audience can get bored and can wonder why they're there and just lose interest, or there's certain reasons why this doesn't work. And so it was really interesting when there was this discussion between these two people. And as you said, it went on for a little bit longer.
Mm.
And it was on quite a high level, because they were speaking on philosophical terms and they were speaking on all these terms. And so it immediately just was his way of, I think, injecting a bit more intellect into this movie that would have normally been quite base level.
Yeah.
And that's why you often consume these Netflix movies and then forget about them by the next day.
Yeah.
And so it was lovely to just have that. It was lovely to sort of have someone play with the pacing.
Yeah.
So that you felt a little different.
It felt real though. Like that's what I love about Linklater, is that like a lot of his films have that element of, it's a hangout movie, right?
The best example being Before Sunrise.
Yeah, or so Dazed and Confused.
Dazed
as well.
And Confused, it's is a hangout perfect. Movie.
And
it's just, it's
everybody
just a bunch
wants
of guys,
them.
Yeah. But Before Sunrise, if you haven't seen it, it's one of my favorite films of all time.
The Before trilogy is one of the best trilogies. It's perfect, in my opinion.
So what he did is he made this movie with Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy, where these two strangers meet on a train. And they strike up conversation on the train, and for whatever reason, which you must discover when you watch the movie, they have this one night to spend together in Vienna.
Wow.
And they get off the train, they hang out, and they literally just, did you just look at your arm for goosebumps? Okay, it looked like you did. Because I honestly, I rewatched it recently, and I got the gooey feeling inside where I was like, oh my God, this movie is amazing.
It's so amazing.
And they just hang out, as you said, and so much is revealed about where they're going in life, what they're doing, who they are as people. And it's just filled with so much like love and authenticity, as
authenticity.
You said.
That's what I love about Linklater is he loves to experiment with relationships. So like with Before Sunrise, the follow-up was Before Sunset.
Yeah. So then nine years later. So he catches up with these people in real time.
Yeah.
And then he's made a third, which I must say I actually haven't seen.
Before Midnight is, they're all like, Russell, no jokes. It's a perfect trilogy.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
Because he follows these actors in real time. So he comes back to these two characters, you know, 10 years later, comes back to them 10 years later. So it's this beautiful time capsule where these actors are aging in front of you because it's real. It's a real amount of time has passed. And you hold out so much hope for them in Before Sunrise, which is the first movie. You really want them to be able to see each other again.
Stay together,
He also did Boyhood, right?
Yeah, he did Boyhood, which was shot over 12 years.
So Boyhood is one of the most special movies ever made. Other filmmakers have done this, but I think because Linklater was a more established filmmaker, he was able to pull this off. Mm. And you know, this is an Oscar-nominated film. But Boyhood followed a boy growing up.
Yeah,
so he
quite literally.
So he filmed this kid and shot these scenes every few years till he eventually had this movie of this actual boy growing up.
And becoming, it's a literal coming of age story.
And like, it is the most freaky and incredible movie to watch, because when he cuts between years, it's so eerie, like watching the actual kid.
Yeah.
Because we're so used to seeing like, you know, this kid's looks vaguely similar. Yeah. Oh, they've tried
it's
their best to cast the best
child,
kid.
Yeah.
When it's actually the same kid. Yeah.
Do you know what he's doing now? You've heard about Merrily We Roll Along, right?
No, what's that?
I think that's what it's called. So it's based on a Stephen Sondheim. He was a he did
musicals and
West Side Story.
Yeah,
it's based on one of his shows, which was also an adaptation of another show. But anyways. This movie is going to be shot over 20 years, and Paul Mescal plays the main character, and it's a musical.
Who's Paul Mescal?
He is After Sun. He was in...
He was the dad in After Sun.
Yeah. And did you see Normal People?
No.
With Daisy Edgar Jones? Yeah, he's a great up-and-coming Irish actor, phenomenal performer.
After Sun was special, but I don't quite
all of
stick
us
his face.
So he's phenomenal, and he's playing the lead, and it's a musical. Okay. And but it's being told in reverse order, so it's being told from his later stage and going backwards.
Okay.
So it's going to be over 20 years, which is nuts. And he only started shooting it like 2 years ago, I think.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's crazy. Like
the long game, you know, it's
so
hard.
It's hard
enough as a filmmaker to just make a film.
Yeah.
So to make one that's 20 years in the making, like Boyhood.
Yeah.
Or completing, you know.
I'm just glad that he's not only focusing on that, because then we got Hitman. You know
I mean? No, well, then these other movies come in amongst them. And and so I really think, Hitman's worth your time. If you want a cool date night, I think it works as a nice date night. Because as you said, their chemistry is amazing.
Their chemistry is insane.
And when they lust, it feels very tangible. And it's so sexy.
It is. That's the thing that I always feel creepy saying, it's such a sexy movie.
It is.
They are so hot.
And there's moments where, I thought you'd find this interesting, there's moments where like they really want her to be the sexiest. And they present her in a particular way.
Yeah.
And you're like, this really works because she's beautiful. And it works for what then is a lusty sex scene moment.
Yeah.
And then when they want you to really care for her, the camera shows her beautiful face, like very close up.
It doesn't feel like it's lusting
she
after her.
She acts so well. She acts those scenes so well. And so you really care for her.
Yeah.
Same as him.
That's one
it's lovely. It's a great movie. So just one last final punt. Hitman in cinemas now, but will come to Netflix soon.
Yeah, it's so good. And I just one last thing about it. It's one thing that I loved about it was that it's a film also about people just discovering who they actually are, like gaining confidence. Like, you look at Glenn Powell's character in the movie. He started by playing with these characters. Eventually, he sticks on one that he is, talking to this girl with. He becomes more confident in himself, and he becomes more of people start to notice he becomes a person. Yeah, you know what I mean? It's just so good.
So he goes from this kind of dad gene, very uncool, wearing glasses kind of guy. And then as he spends more time in this persona with the girl, he starts, that starts absorbing itself into his real life. And there's a great moment where, because he's at this varsity lecture, he gets more and more confidence in his delivery of his lessons.
Yeah.
And there's a great moment where one of the students goes like, when did he become hot?
Yeah. Girl, he's always been hot. Let's be real here. Oh my God. But anyways, what else have you been watching, Russ?
We are fucking going through Lie to Me like it's nobody's business. Yeah. It's so cool to find a show that's an older show where there's so many seasons.
And it's finished.
Yeah,
you got a storyline. It's coming to an end.
Well, this
is
very episodic, but Lie to Me is on Disney Plus. It's a good kind of whodunit show. It's interesting twist. I've mentioned it on previous episodes. It's interesting twist here is that our main character is a deception expert. This is Tim Roth, who can tell if someone's lying. Yeah. So it's all about the nuances of people's actions, and you learn along the way of you repeated the question in your answer. That means you're deflecting. That means you could be lying. You know, and it's all it's a crime show at the end of the day. And they really do make it interesting. Lie to Me on Disney Plus. We're sort of well into it, and it's a good easy watch.
Yo, Tim Roth. I've always loved Tim Roth, but recently, as of 2 years ago, like 3 years ago, I can't look at it in the same way. There's a movie called Resurrection. Have you heard of it?
No.
So Rebecca Hall, she's an actress. She was in The Prestige. She plays Christian Bale's wife, right?
Okay.
And she directed this movie. She's the lead. And it came out the same year as Pearl with Mia Goth, right?
Okay.
And, did you ever watch Pearl?
No, I haven't, but I know about it.
So there's that famous monologue that she did in it where everyone lost their minds over it. It was like a 7-minute monologue or something.
Mm.
Rebecca Hall did a monologue that same year, which was better, in my opinion. Better directed, better performed, everything.
And this is in the movie Resurrection.
Resurrection. So
is it anywhere? Is it available?
I think it's on Prime or Netflix. It should be available to rent, I think, locally.
Okay.
But anyway, so back of the box, it's about a woman who, she's, a high-powered, corporate woman in the space. She's successful. She's a single mother.
Mm.
But then one day, her ex from X amount of years ago arrives and just starts fucking everything up for her.
Does Tim Roth play
Tim
the
Roth,
ex?
And it's a thriller, but there's like a bit of surreal aspects to it as well.
Mm.
And it is really fucking disturbing. It's phenomenal. First time I watched it, I was like, I like it. Second time I watched it, I was like, holy shit. And Tim Roth is just menacing in it. Like,
because he's got a little bit of an evilish demeanor in Lie to Me.
This is the scariest I've ever seen him. Like, he is just incredible in this film, and it's just such a great film on I hate to say great film on, because great implies that it's like it's happy or whatever, but it's a good film on relationship trauma, emotional abuse, all that stuff.
Okay.
It's a hard movie to watch if you've experienced that emotional trauma or relationship trauma or stuff like that. But it is just such a great film, and it is just so unique. And Rebecca Hall didn't direct it. My bad. She directed a movie called Passing. I was thinking of that. But she is just outrageous in
it. So she just acts in it.
She is phenomenal. It's her best performance.
Resurrection.
And, Resurrection.
Okay. On a slightly lighter note, I watched the very old Robert Downey Jr. film Only You.
That's one of the movies we had taped on VHS when I was a kid.
Really?
Yeah, I haven't seen it in literally like 30 years.
I didn't know anything about it, but Netflix somehow was like, you need to watch this. And I watched the trailer and I was like, okay, this is cool. So I think this is in the middle of Downey's like heroin days.
Yeah, it's his very early like scandalous days. Yeah,
yeah, this 100%. Is like him as a, you know, this is obviously pre-Iron Man,
yeah.
pre, you know, him... becoming a more of a Hollywood
post-Chaplin. Yeah,
but you know, he had that I think people held out a lot of hope for him, and so he was in a lot of these movies and he wrestled with a lot of his demons and was always in and out of court for drug possession. But mid-90s, this is him and Marissa Tomei.
I love Marissa Tomei.
She's lovely.
She's so great.
And
my cousin
is,
Vinny, oh my god.
Yeah, and so this is a lovely rom-com. It's on Netflix. It's called Only You, and it's about a woman who is about to get married but had these moments when she was a kid where she got the name of the person she was going to marry.
Oh, jeez, you see, I don't remember anything about
this. And it was written out on an Ouija board, you know, which is the sort of, you know, meant to be this kind of demonic thing that you do. And also this tarot reader or this crystal ball reader at a fair also said the name, the name of this person. And so she's now about to get married, kind of settling down with like a dentist. I love how the dentist is always
the boring
job. And, but then she gets wind that there's this guy that's got this name, which she's always thought she was destined to marry. And so she goes on this whole quest to meet this person.
Yeah.
It's whimsical, but it's fun.
You see, I don't remember anything about that. Like there's a visual moment in the movie that is like burnt into my brain. There's that scene where they reach into the mouth of that sculpture.
Yes, yeah.
That's the only thing I remember about that movie, because when I was a kid, when I saw that, I was always convinced that the hand would be chopped off.
No, it's like
I'm definitely going to check it out.
It's a thing to do in Rome or something.
Yeah, for sure.
And Robert Downey Jr. is this love interest, and it just becomes this fun little whimsical, you know, move through Italy.
Yeah.
It's very largely in Italy. And there's also a great, not cameo, but there's a small role played by Billy Zane.
Jeez, Billy Zane days.
Yeah,
wow.
He was in Titanic.
Yeah, and what was the one where he was the superhero, Phantom or something?
I don't know, but he was also in The Mummy, hey?
Yeah, no, he wasn't. No, he wasn't in The Mummy.
Okay.
We're thinking of the South African guy.
No, I know Arnold Fosloo was The Mummy, but I thought Billy Zane was involved. But he was also in Zoolander. I love it. It's like, quiet down, Billy Zane.
you should listen to Billy Zane. He's a cool guy.
Yeah, that's the quote. I knew there was something to do with Billy Zane. I saw something really interesting about Billy Zane.
Oh, yeah?
He is playing Brando.
That makes sense.
In an upcoming Marlon Brando biopic.
But that makes sense because he looked Brando-esque.
Yeah.
You know?
I think if you just get those arresting blue eyes covered.
Yeah. And he does
physically he looks a lot like him.
Yeah. I wonder if he's gonna go method and just be a total dickhead on set.
Yeah.
Just rocks up late, not reading the script, having overeaten, and like, yeah, the Apocalypse Now story is so funny. You've heard that, right?
Quite largely, but tell me again.
Okay, so with Apocalypse Now, famously, Marlon Brando was in that, right? He plays Colonel Kurtz, the big bad guy at the end of the river, you know what I mean? So he arrives, so it's based on a book called Heart of Darkness by Conrad Hall. Joseph Conrad, all right. And he arrives on set. Like, so he's also costing Coppola and them a lot of money. It was something like $1 million a week.
Because Apocalypse Now was famously a very difficult film to shoot because it's in the jungle.
Yeah. Go watch the movie Hearts of Darkness, which is the making of it, right?
Yeah.
So anyways, Marlon Brando arrives late on, he arrives on set, but he's supposed to be a stick thin character because he's been living in the jungle, right? So he arrives and he's grossly overweight. He hasn't read the book or the script, and he's just difficult. He's improvising every single line, and Coppola's like losing his mind. And he also has to deal with a coked out Dennis Hopper on set, who's also like giving him so much problems.
Okay.
And the whole time, it's just so funny watching that because he's like losing his patience with, yeah, with Brando, because this guy is a genius and he pulls it through, obviously, and it makes sense, yeah, why he's overweight. And you know,
I've always wondered, and I've never quite been able to see why Brando was as celebrated as he was. Maybe I need to watch more. But
Godfather, jeez.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen it, but yeah. I mean, maybe I must like sort of rewatch it as more of an adult and go like, why was this guy considered one of the greatest actors of all time?
On the Waterfront is probably my favorite Marlon Brando performance. On the Waterfront, Streetcar Named Desire, he's great in those as well. I mean,
I read the book recently, Streetcar Named Desire. I read the play. With
Tennessee.
Play. Tennessee Williams. Yeah. And so was there a movie, Streetcar Named Desire?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought Brando maybe did the performances on Broadway.
He did that there. That was like one of his big breakthrough roles. I mean,
was the film adaptation of Streetcar Named Desire.
And okay. There's a funny in Poor Things last year in Poor Things is that scene where Mark Ruffalo is screaming out Bella, and that's straight out of Streetcar.
How do you pronounce his name?
I panicked there. It's Mark Ruffalo.
Ruffalo.
Yeah. What did I say? Ruffalo.
No, you said Ruffalo.
Oh, okay.
To me, it's Ruffalo.
Oh, it's Ruffalo. No, Ruffalo. I panicked.
Oh, okay.
Your gaze is making me panic. There's times where, do you ever get that where like you?
No, I totally. Yeah. I deal and talk to loads of people through Short Straw and the Bioscope, and there's times where it's like, I know you. I of course know your name.
Yeah.
But in a panic, I'm like, whoop, blank. Yeah.
No, but even
I
like,
don't know your name, and I have to now introduce you to someone, and I'm like, how do I not know this person's name? So in this moment of panic.
Yeah, there's no, the one thing that always happens to me, and I know everyone goes through it, but there'll be times where I'll just mispronounce a word that I've never mispronounced before.
Yeah.
And then my girlfriend just fucking rails me every time. Like, I'll say, like, something. I'll be like, I'll say a sentence to her, and she'll be like, she'll just won't shut up about it. She's like, did you say that?
I really wish in life we could have one of those, like, record skip.
Yeah.
Just like, just mid-conversation, someone go,
yeah, jeez.
What was
like,
that? How did you just say that? Sorry, I don't mean to point it out.
No, thanks.
But, we have lots of things like this that we can very easily identify with each other on.
Yeah.
You have something remarkably unique, which I'd love to just touch on now, and I think we can get further down the line with a bit more time and in future episodes. When you come to work at the video store, the first thing we do is we go and grab a quick cup of coffee.
Yeah.
You don't drink coffee.
Yeah.
And I thought that was quite innocuous and whatever, you just don't drink coffee. But then you later revealed as to why.
Yeah, so I was raised Mormon.
That's interesting.
There's two branches. There's LDS, Latter-day Saints, and there's FLDS, which is fundamentalist. So those are the guys who have like 12 wives and communes and stuff. They're the ones who are in like America, you know what I mean?
And which faction is that?
FLDS, Fundamentalist Latter-day Saints.
Okay.
So I was raised LDS, which is the cool one. but like, yeah, so I haven't attended church in years for personal reasons. Some of the things stuck, like I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't do coffee.
Because that, I also had a friend growing up, actually in the band days, we got to know her, and she was also Mormon, and she explained it. And you don't have anything that can alter your state, right? That's the idea.
Yeah.
So that goes so far as caffeine. And
yeah,
like
it's really stupid.
Fizzy drinks, you know, like a Coke drink.
Yeah, I was one of the, we were the black sheeps of our
area. Okay, you drank
area.
Coke.
Yeah, we were like, fuck that, you know. But you get some who are like really intense where they don't eat chocolate or like they don't
because of the sugar would alter your caffeine so when leaving the church is just perhaps on this last note you then didn't rebel, hey?
So yeah, I mean I haven't officially left because you have to like deregister and stuff like that. It's
crazy, really, it's
actually
an official registry
when you get baptized. We don't get baptized when we're born, you get baptized. 8 is the minimum age, right? So once you get baptized, you fall into the register and stuff like that. I think I'm probably fucking that up. But yeah, since, I mean, I haven't been to church in 12 years, maybe longer.
But in that, removal for whatever reason, personal to you, you haven't wanted to drink, smoke.
The only thing I've rebelled from church is I swear. Yeah. Or like we always watched like more scandalous movies, and you know, I never. It's also another requirement. A lot of the men, it's not, you don't have to do it, but a lot of them are kind of not pushed, but encouraged to go on mission, right? Which is 2 years to go prophesy and stuff like that. And my brothers did it, and you know, good on them. They loved it. You know, it
and they went to
them.
Some godforsaken parts of the world.
My brother just went to Cape Town.
Okay.
And my other brother went to Sudan, Ethiopia, those areas. But with Uganda, me, I just was never interested, because a sad thing is a lot of the times guys would go on mission because they want to impress a girl that they want to marry, or they want to impress their parents. Yeah. And then when they get back, they've gotten married and they're like, okay, what next? And they're told, oh, you have to get married.
So, I met a dude, I played in a cricket league, and the one guy met his wife in Uganda. She's a Ugandan woman.
Oh, crazy.
And was like on a mission, he met her and brought her like back to South Africa.
Yeah, I mean, look, it works for some people, but it just didn't work for me. There are just personal issues that I had with the church as well. Like, you know, for me personally, with mental health issues, they kind of just swept it under the rug. Or like,
it wasn't a place that addressed it nicely.
Yeah, they didn't address it nicely. It was a whole like, oh, just pray it away. You know,
it's a lot of Catholicism.
Yeah, we'll just give you a blessing. You know,
say five Hail Marys and your sins.
Yeah,
washed clean.
Stop. We'll bless you, and then that way you won't have thoughts about men, or you won't have thoughts about sadness, or you know, you won't have thoughts about girls if you're a girl. Or like, there would be like also taboo topics. So like, sex is very taboo. Mm. So,
which is ironic because the other faction has many wives.
Yeah. So like, but it's just wild because the sex aspect, like I've spoken to a close friend of mine who's since left the church, and she was telling me, I remember at one stage we were talking about like the conversations of sex for you guys when we were at 12 to 18, you're in a specific like group of classes, right? You all
as a church classes.
Back in the day, church would be 3 hours, so you'd have sacrament, then you'd have 2 hours of classes, one with like combined with, you know, all the ages of like all the men and stuff, and all the woman.
What
stuff.
Day of the week is this?
Sunday.
This is
and but then there'd be when you get 12, when you turn 12 as a man, you get the priesthood, which is essentially the power, not the power of God, but some powers of God. So you can administer blessings. You have certain responsibilities.
Interesting.
Right? So at 12,
it's like a religious puberty.
Yeah,
you now have it. Yeah,
totally. Right. So you now have it. So basically, we turn 12. That's when you're a deacon. Then I think when you turn 14, you become a teacher, and then when you turn 16, you become a priest. Right. So it's different levels
like
of responsibility. Yeah,
like you now have a yellow belt.
Yeah, you have a yellow belt. You have a brown belt. You know. So, anyways, we'd have classes, and then every now and then they'd have like the sex talk in classes, but they would talk about how like, oh, you know, she abstinence, you know, it's going to be worth it. But the whole abstinence was also don't masturbate.
Yeah.
So like these,
it's very hard telling a
horny teenager,
a 16-year-old kid not to masturbate.
So I'm going to go personal here, but I mean, that was really hard to deal with as a teenager, you know, where you are being told that you shouldn't masturbate because it's wrong.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like, as a teenager, I know, I talked to Cole about this as well, because he had a very similar, like, conservative
very Christian school. Yeah, yeah.
And one thing that, like, really bummed me out as a teenager was whenever I would, I'm going to be gross now, whenever I would masturbate, I would punish myself afterwards. I would, like, cut myself, or I would really make it feel like I've committed the worst sin in the world.
Yeah, which is horrible.
It's horrible. I mean, you don't want teenagers are supposed to explore themselves, you know, they're supposed to get accustomed to themselves and stuff. And thankfully, since then, it's not like that anymore.
Yeah.
Where I don't feel that's a sin or whatever.
Yeah,
it was a hard time of my childhood, man. Like teenage years.
Oh. For those who've seen Poor Things, which is now on Disney Plus, just to root this in video store conversation. But when, you know, that's a movie about a woman who's got this baby's brain in her. So the whole movie is her coming of age and learning and figuring out the world. And there's a great moment where she discovers her vagina.
Yeah.
And she discovers the fact that it gives her pleasure. And there's this lovely moment where she's like, wants to do it at the dinner table. And someone's like, you can't.
Yeah, with the apple.
Yeah, and she's like, what do you mean? It makes me happy.
Yeah.
And then you realize, like, it's such a great play and it's such a great way to show how society has given taboo to something that...
Polite society is overrated, that's what they say. Yeah.
Something that in essence is a very simple, happy thing. But we've layered it with just so much. Of course, I'm not advocating for masturbating at the dinner table, but it was such a great way to see the world.
Yeah. And
when you're like, oh, we've given it way too much.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, very interesting. But listen, I think we can talk about this all day.
We'll have a whole series.
I think we must just touch on it every now and again, because to be honest, I think it's what makes for interesting conversation is how this unique childhood has affected or played a part in how you see the world and how you consume stuff. I think that's very interesting. I think it's very fascinating.
Yeah.
I went and watched Book of Mormon in Broadway.
Oh, you actually saw it on Broadway?
I managed to see the play, and it was on this very particular trip that I did, and it was a combination of like birthday, Christmas money.
Was it the original cost?
No, it was a little later down the line, but it was one of the more expensive tickets I'd ever been involved in purchasing, to the point where like it was a little bit silly. And sat in this audience and was like, this better be good.
Yeah.
This has to be good. And by the end of it, I was like, oh my God, it was amazing. And I listened for the rest of this trip. I listened to the soundtrack. And it's awesome. And of course, it's all about Mormonism.
Yeah.
And it's about this particular character who I think in his church, they get assigned where you're going to go on
you
mission.
Don't get to choose.
And, and his dream is to go to Orlando, Florida, because he thinks that's like the greatest
Mecca.
Place on earth.
Yeah.
But instead, he goes to Uganda.
Yeah.
And it's all about this sort of American Mormon in amongst the poor people of Uganda.
Yeah, there's that great song where it's, isn't it like if you have gay thoughts, just switch it off? It's, and that's what it's like. It's crazy. Like I've known a lot of gay members who have had to suppress that because they've been told, no, if you get married, it'll solve your problems. Start a family, it'll solve your problems, you know? And a lot of the times now these guys are leaving their marriages or they... you know, unfortunately cheat because they can't live that life anymore. Yeah. You know what I mean? It sucks. Yeah. But anyways, to be continued.
Yeah, no, it's lovely. And this is what I love about the video store is that, you know, it's flavored by what we're watching.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, I do love a good talk about our lives, about our childhood, about our upbringing, about how we see the world.
I
do appreciate that. And so thanks for sharing.
It's a pleasure.
And I think that's the other part about something like podcasting is that because it's this longer discussion, you can get into the weeds.
Mm.
But I think we need to remain authentically ourselves, and we need to need to be able to be vulnerable so that we can share it with folks. Because I think that's the magic of it.
And that also...
It's not the surface level chat that just takes 10 minutes. We get into it. And I think that's...
Like you said, I mean, it forms our taste in things as well. It forms what we read. It forms what we resonate with what we read or what we watch or what we listen to.
Yeah.
So, but we should probably help this customer who's been standing for the past hour. Sorry,
damn
sir.
It. Actually do our jobs. Okay. Lovely. Thank you, guys. We appreciate you listening thus far. Our home base is thevideostore.co.za. Links to other episodes are there. Social media, please chime in. Also, please give us your returns. And what we mean by that is record a voice note, which you can email to thevideostorepod@gmail.com with you returning something that you've watched recently, and just send us that short little voice note and we can play it on the episode. All right. We'll see you again this Thursday for Richard popping in to rent something. Thanks for listening. Thanks, Perrin.
Thanks, man. Bye, guys.
Cheers. Bye.